All right. We're holding on Sadiq Aleph, Omar Aleph, by the two dots, the 12th line. We learned yesterday about the concept of Oymed when it comes to Mises Beis Din. We said that if Reuven hits Shimon with a rock, for example, or his fist or anything like that, then we said we had Shimon Atzmoni saying that we have to be able to bring the actual fist or rock or what have you to Beis Din in order to evaluate whether under normal circumstances it would be capable of killing Shimon. And if not, then Reuven is potter because we say it was a freak accident, basically. And then we had Rabbi Akiva saying it's not always the case. You have to bring it to Beis Din. If it's lost, for example, then the Edim can just testify about it to Beis Din. But yes, it does have to be that the Edim saw the object long enough to be able to make a mental evaluation. Is this likely to be something? Is this something that under normal circumstances we think could have killed a person? So now the Gemara says, Yibo yesh oymed l'nezokin. When it comes to Nezikin, do we do that same kind of thing, a similar kind of Oymed, or not? So, in other words, same idea. If somebody hits somebody else with a fist or a rock or any of a bunch of other things, well, for that matter, not a person. For that matter, as the Gemara is going to go to talk about now, let's say a shur falls into a shallow ditch. Do we say whatever injuries happen, happen, and we don't really care how deep the ditch is or how big the rock is, that when it comes to Nezakin, we don't sit, make such evaluations. We always say that person is chayev. Or do we say that they also, we have to figure out here, this animal broke a leg. Is it under normal circumstances, would it be reasonable to assume that it happened in a ditch of only this depth? Or here, this person is laid up in bed for a week. Is it reasonable to assume that that's all because of the injury from a stone of this size? So that's yesh oymed l'nezakin, oy ein oymed l'nezakin. Mi amrinon tolo hu dam dinan. Is it that only by misa do we calculate? Do we make such evaluations? We say we b'hochi nafka neshama, b'hochi le nafka neshama. Only when it comes to death. Would we say we have to figure out is this stone or this or the height of this tower or whatever, all the different possibilities, is it strong enough that under normal circumstances we could expect that it would that we would say, in other words, that only a stone of a certain minimum size is going to kill a person if it's thrown at him. Anything less than that, we would say basically it was a freak accident. And Rashi points out the Psukim, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, mention this point. For example, the Pasuk mentions the Pasuk mentions be'even yoda she'yomus bochi kohu, that if a person hits somebody else with a stone that he can hold in his hand, that he would die with. So we learn from that that Beis Din or that Beis Din has to be able to figure out, well, given a stone this size, is it reasonable to expect that it would have killed this person? So maybe only by Misa, because the Pasuk says so. Avol nezakin kol dehu. Maybe by nezakin we don't need to make such an evaluation. Even if it's a small thing, sometimes you could still have a hezek could be caused even by a tiny thing. Or maybe there's no difference. Once we have that principle in the Torah, by Ritzayach, maybe we apply it to nezakin as well. Toshma. So here we're going to try to prove from a Mishnah that we learned earlier in the Masechta. When we were learning the dinim of Bur, so we learned that there are a variety of different kinds of pits in the ground to which the din of a burr would apply. We had a burr itself is a round one, but we also had a shiach, which is a square or rectangular one. We had a ma'orah, which is one that has a roof over it. We had charitzin and itzin, which are other various kinds of shapes and other kinds of different shapes on top and at the bottom, etc. Anyway, the Mishnah had said, given that you equally well chayev, if you dig any one of those in a shur or chamur or whatever falls into it, why does the pasuk mention only bur? And the Mishnah had said, ma bur sheyesh b'kedei l'chomis asara tefachim, because a bur typically is at least 10, is 10 tefachim deep, and that's enough to kill. Of course, sheyesh b'kedei l'chomis asara tefachim. The same way, when you chayev, if an animal falls into your bur, only or shiach or ma'or or any of these other kind, only if it's at least 10 tefachim deep. And the Mishnah continued, if the bur or what have you is less than 10 tefachim, and a shor chamor falls into it and dies, potter, then you're potter, because we say that normally 10 tefachim is not enough to kill the animal. So we can say maybe this particular animal had a weak heart or something, and therefore a fall of less than 10 tefachim killed it, but we can't hold you. We can't hold you, the owner of the burr, responsible for a freak thing like that. But the Mishnah had continued, Huzak Boy Chayev. But if the animal was injured, falling into this shallow burr of less than 10 tefachim, then he would be Chayev. Now, when the Mishnah says, Hoyu Pchusin Me'asar Tefachim, when it's less than 10 tefachim, my lab mi mato l'mayla kachoshiv. Shouldn't we assume the Mishnah means we're going from the least amount to the most amount? In other words, the Mishnah is saying, when it comes anywhere between 1 and 10 tefachim, there can't be misa under normal circumstances. And if there was misa, then we're not worried about it, because then that's then we can say that's not the fault of the owner of the burr. But there is nezakin, almala nezakin kolder hu. Meaning, in other words, so what we're saying is, anything less than 10 tefachim, the Mishnah is saying there can be nezakin. So it sounds like we're saying, even if the burr was only 1 tefach deep, even if it's only 2 tefachim deep, even if it's only 3 tefachim deep, etc., in each case, when there's nezakin, then we're mechayiv him. We don't go and say, well, let's calculate, a burr 1 tefach deep should only cause this amount of nezakin. A burr 2 tefachim deep should cause more nezakin, etc. It sounds, the way the Mishnah is saying it, like we don't say that. In that case, shemamina ein oimin nezakin. Wouldn't that show, therefore, that we don't make this oimin, we don't make this evaluation when it comes to nezakin? Because we would say that when it comes to nezakin, it doesn't really matter. How doesn't really matter the fact that the burr is very shallow. Nevertheless, any hezek that's caused to the animal, then we're gonna make the owner chayev for it. So in that case that would answer our question that yes, when it comes to nezakin, we don't do the kind of oimed that we do when we don't do the kind of oimed that we do when it comes to misa. So does that prove it? However, the Gemara says loy mi ma'ilo lamata kachoshiv. Not necessarily, because when the Mishnah says less than 10 tefachim, doesn't mean anything less than 10 tefachim. Doesn't mean, like we said, anything between 1 and 10. It means just the opposite. It means mi ma'ilo lamata. It means, in other words, once we get below 10, then we're talking only about nezakin. V'hachikama asara misa'ika pachas asara misa'ika. When there's a bird 10 tefachim deep, then it's capable of killing an animal, and then the person will be chayiv if the animal dies. Pachas ma'asara purta. If it's any less than 10 tefachim, nezakin isa misaleka, there can only be nezakin. There can't be death at that point under normal circumstances, but ula olam emalach, yesh oimed l'nezakin, we can still say there is an oimed when it comes to nezakin as well. And all it means is, v'chol midi u'midi, ki'echa de mitzaka be'inen. Each one we would say, well, look at the injuries to this animal. Is this the kind of thing that we can expect under normal circumstances would have been caused by a bird of this depth? So in other words, maybe all the Mishnah is trying to tell us is that anything below 10 tefachim, don't even talk about Misa. Below 10 tefachim, though, when the Mishnah had said, Huzak boy chayev, we would have to calculate. If the bird is 9 tefachim deep, we can expect that the animal is going to get injured more severely. If the burr is only 8 tefachim deep, then we should expect that maybe we find the animal is as badly injured as it would, as a normal animal would be, falling into a burr of 9, we would say we can't be mechayev, the owner of the burr, for the full nezakin, and so forth. So maybe, in fact, the Mishnah may be implying that, so you can't really prove one way or the other. Okay. Toshma, the Gemara says, fine, let's try to bring another proof. Abraisa says we've been learning throughout the Masechta, you have the din of Shein Va'ayin. You have the din that if an Eved Knani loses his eye or his tooth or any of 24 Rosh Eivorim, then he goes for that. If the master, that is, knocks out his eye or his tooth or any one of 24 Rosh Eivorim, then he goes free. So the Abraza says he koal enovasimoi. What if he hit him on his eye and caused him to go blind? Al osnovachershoi, or he hits him directly on his ear and makes him deaf. Eved yotze behen lacheros, then the eved would go free because now he's lost the use of that eye or tooth. But kineged enovene roya. But what if he only hit in front of his eye? Meaning, in other words, so let's say, for example, the guy was standing next to a wall, and the master banged on the wall, let's say, in front of his eye, the enoroya, and because of that, he can't see. Because of that, in other words, it had such a strong effect on him that now, even though the master hadn't touched himself, he went blind. Or kineged ozne, the enoshemeya, or he banged the wall near the guy's ear, and then they banged the wall near the guy's ear, and he went deaf. Ein eved yotze behem lecheros. Then the eved does not go free because then the eved does not go free. Now my timer. Why not in that second case? Lav mishumda in an umdana. Wouldn't it be bepashtus? Because when it comes to nizokin, also we need to make an oimed. We need to figure out. We would say that you can't under normal circumstances you can't expect that that hitting the wall in front of a person's eye should cause him to go blind. Therefore, we would have reason to say that in this case, that evidently it wasn't a normal situation. It was a freak accident, basically. And therefore we see that you do need an oimed for nezakin. Because we would say that the banging on the wall in front of a person's eye is not normally enough to blind him. So here what you have is, the guy had bad mazel or something. So that would show that, yes, when it comes to nizokin, you also need oimed. So the answer is loy, not necessarily. The reason is mishum damrin and hu de avis nafshe. You can say the reason is basically because we would say it's not even a matter of nezek. It's basically that he scared himself. He took the he allowed himself to get too startled by the noise, and therefore it had such an effect on him that he went blind. So there, but you can't really call that nezek at all. That's really not even nezek. That's really only more like grum. And you can't be chayev for grama as far as nezikin, or as far as having to free the eved. And in fact, kidetanya, that would be just like we learn in another braisa. Hamavis es chaveroi, we learned this earlier in the masechta. If a person scares somebody else, and therefore now that can include, for example, that he scares him and causes the guy to fall down or something, but it can also include, as we're going to go on to describe in the Braisa, you can have an example where he scares him and actually causes him to go deaf, for example. So potter din adam chayev b'din shemayim. So he's potter from human judgment, based in can't make him pay, but he's chayev b'din shemayim that in order not to be punished by Hashem, he's going to have to pay. Ketzad, and what do we mean? What's an example of hamavis es chaveroi, where he's potter min dinei adam? Toka ba'oznei v'chershoi, if he yelled into the other guy's ear and made him deaf, potter, that would be the case where he's potter min dinei adam. He didn't touch the guy. All he did was he made a loud noise near his ear, and that caused the guy to go deaf. But if he grabbed a hold of him, and then yelled into his ear and made him deaf, then he would be chayev dine odom as well, because then he did a maisa with the guy's goof. So we see from that, in other words, when he doesn't touch the goof itself, then it's not even a matter of that we would say this kind of hezek is not likely to cause that effect. We would say it's not even considered a hezek at all. We would say that's why we say he's potter medina adam. So therefore, we can say the same thing with the eved when he banged on the wall in front of his eye or in front of his ear, and he went blind or deaf. It's not so much we would say that such a bang we wouldn't expect under normal circumstances to cause this degree of hezek. We would say it's not even really considered a hezek at all. It's the guy's own. It's the guy's own fault for taking it too much to heart, for allowing himself to get that startled that a bang in front of him, in front of his eye, is going to cause him to go blind. So still no proof one way or the other about this matter of Oymed, whether in a case where he did grab a hold of him, let's say, or where he did bang on his eye, do we say that we have to figure out, well, how hard was the blow or whatever? Is that likely to have caused this injury? Maybe we don't say that. Maybe we just say across the board, once he grabbed a hold of him, once he did something to his body or threw something at him or whatever, then we're going to say he's chayiv for the nezek no matter what, even if it seems all out of proportion to what he did. So still no proof one way or the other. Tashma, let's bring another proof. A braisa says, chamisha dvarim, the five things that we've been learning throughout the perek that a person is chayev to pay for a nezek, nezek, tzar, ripo, etc. So those five things, oimdin oisa v'noslin lemiyad, based and evaluates the amount for all of them, and he pays him on the spot. Ripui v'sheves ad shi'srape, and as far as ripui and sheves, Bastin has to figure out how long will it take until he gets healed. So Bastin is going to figure out in the first place, this guy got injured in such a way that we expect it's going to take him X amount of days to recover, and therefore he's going to need though that doctors for that number of days, and that's it. And during those X number of days, he can't work, and therefore there needs to be sheves. So Bastin figures all that out, and they tell the mazik to pay it all at once. Tosfos brings a girsa Tosfos says that, in other words, the point is exactly that we figure out how much the sheves and the ripui would have been expected to be, and then he gets that on the spot. And the same thing with the rest of the chamisha dvarim. As opposed to Tosfos seems to have had a girsa in front of them that said differently. But Tosfos is saying no. The way we have it over here is correct. That we're saying that everything, including Sheves and Ripui, we shouldn't think, in other words, that maybe it's Ripui and Sheves, since after all, maybe we don't know for sure in advance. As the Gemara is going to go on to point out, sometimes a person might recover faster or slower than expected. Maybe you would have thought that you shouldn't do those all in a lump sum. Maybe you should do those day by day. And we're saying, no, it's not so. Bastin figures it out in advance. Amduhu. Now, what happens if they evaluate it? And instead, the guy is deteriorating and it's taking him longer to recover than he otherwise would. We're only required to give him as much as the original evaluation. So when the guy was first injured and the case came to Bastin, the doctors who Bastin consults figure out that it would take him 5 days to recover. In the event this guy takes longer and it takes 7 days, we don't make the mazik pay for those two extra days. We just say that we go according to the original evaluation, and that's that. We had that concept a few times already in the perek, where we said, on the other hand, if he was giving him day by day, then it's different. Then he would, in fact, have to pay for the extra days. But here, where he gives him a lump sum in the beginning, then we just say that he does the based in just sticks with the original evaluation. And the other way around, amduhu v'hivri, and if based in evaluated and he recovered faster than expected in 3 days, let's say instead of five, noisin like kol masham duhu, still he gets everything that they had originally evaluated him for, because we say Rashi says min hashamayim, they had rachmanus on him and helped him recover faster. But the point is, in other words, so we do an oimed to begin with. We figured out that we can expect that this injury will take 5 days, let's say, and then we have the different possibilities if it takes more or less. By the way, Rashi mentions in this connection also, included in the ripui and the sheves, Rashi explains, is also the zonus. The guy needs to eat during that time. So the mazik has to pay for that as well, because now the guy is not able to go and get himself food. Anyway, the point is, so that's not that really consider a separate, we don't consider that a separate thing. We don't say there are six things, because basically that's part of Ripo Yosheves, that because he's recovering and his recovery requires food, and because he has Sheves and he can't go to work, and therefore he can't earn money for food during that time, then therefore the Mazik has to supply that. It's all part of Ripo Yosheves. Anyway, the point is, so we see from that, Shemamina Yesh Oymed L'Nezakin. So we see from that there is an Oymed when it comes to Nezakin. So Bastin evaluates how long can it be expected to for him to recover. So the Gemara answers no, because that you're talking about a different kind of oimed. Lameima gavra, to evaluate the person, kama lichtza mehomaka, how long he can be expected to be sick and in bed as a result of this blow, kama loy mikatzer, and how long we expect that, and how long we expect that he's not going to be sick from it. Loy kama boyalon devadem nin, and there's no question, of course, we make an oimed of that, as the Brai said. We figure out, based on, we see the guy has these injuries now, so how long is it expected for him to recover? The question is to evaluate the object that was used to cause the nezek in the first place. Whether it's likely to have caused this damage or not. So in other words, we have to distinguish, the Gemara says. You thought we were talking about that there has to be an oimed how long the guy is going to take to recover. No, once we find the guy has such and such injuries, then of course we need to know how long can we expect that it'll take him to recover. What we have to figure out in the first place is what caused these injuries. You're finding that the guy has such and such injuries. Can we reasonably reconstruct that a rock of this size or whatever of this size or of this force or whatever can be expected under normal circumstances to cause such extensive injuries? And then we go according to that. That would be the question of yesh oimin l'nezakin or ein oimin l'nezakin. So you don't have an answer to that yet. So is this object capable of causing this kind of nezek or not? That's the question. The Braisa that we just quoted about Ripui and Sheves has nothing to do with that. So that's the question. What's the din? What as far as that kind of argument? And the Gemara says, Toshma, we can prove from the Braisa we said before that when the Shimon HaTimni Omer, Ma Egrif Miyuchod Shemosel La'edor La'edim, Shimon HaTimni had said that just like a fist, when the Pasuk mentions in Parshas Mishpatim that a person hits somebody else with a fist or with a rock, and we said that Shimon HaTimni said, why did the Pasuk need to mention a fist? Because the fist is always available to the Eda, to the Beis Din, to evaluate it. Because when the Mazik comes to Beis Din, then his fist is there as well. And Beis Din can look at the size of it and figure out whether it would be capable of doing this kind of injury. And it's available to the Edim to begin with to see it. And Shimon HaTimni had said, Afkol Miyuchad Shemosel La'edor La'edim. The same thing, anything else with which the injury has caused has to be available to the Eda and the Edim to look at. So fine, Rabbi Akiva had disagreed and said it doesn't need to be available to the Eda afterwards, to the Beis Din. It's enough that the Edim testify about it and report to Beis Din what size it was, and Beis Din will make their own calculation of what that's capable of doing. But the point is, we do see Shmamina Yesh Oimed L'Nezakin. So yes, we see from that that there is an Oimed when it comes to that kind of thing. You have that Reuven hit Shimon with his fist, and now Shimon is injured because of that. So based in, we'll calculate, well, let's look at the size of Reuven's fist, and let's consider how hard a punch he could have thrown, and is it reasonable to assume, for example, that with something like that, under normal circumstances, he could have broken Shimon's leg or done whatever particular injury it is that we find Shimon has, or would we say that this is more of a freak kind of thing that normally a punch like that shouldn't cause such extensive injuries, and here we have then therefore we can't be Mechayev Reuven for all of that. So Shmamina, that proves that indeed we make that kind of Oimed, both as far as Misa, which was the original thing in the Braisa, as well as for Nizam. In fact, at the top of the Amud, when we learned the end of the piece of Gemara yesterday, the Gemara already had that point, because we talked about evaluating the shur as far as the nezakin to another shur or something like that. But when the Gemara had this particular discussion about whether about yesh oimin the nezakin or not, it hadn't known of that conclusion from the previous piece yet, because of course, you know, eventually when Ravina and Ravashi compiled the Gemara, then they put it in a certain order, but before that, the discussions were taking place in the Beis Medrash, and they may have taken place in a different order. Okay. the Mishnah, so the Gemara says, Omamar, so now one more point from that Braisa we have to consider. We said, Duhu v'hivri, if they evaluated that it's going to take him a certain amount of time to recover, and then in the end he recovered faster than that, Noistan like Komash Amduhu, then we said we would give the Nizik everything that was in the original Omed. So in other words, he gets 5 days worth of, so in other words, for example, in our example, he'd get the amount of money that it would take to pay doctors for 5 days, even though in the event he only needed them for 3 days. So the Gemara says, Messiah le Rabba. This supports what Rabba says. The Amar Rabba, Hai manda amdu l'kula yoma, when they evaluated that a person is going to take an entire day to recover, the ipak l'pauga di yoma, and instead he recovered in the middle of the day, the ka'ovid avidta, and now he's able to go and continue his work. Yahavin and the kula yoma, we give him the money for the entire day because we say min shmayo de rachmi alei. We say that min hashemayim they had rachmanos on. What Rava is being machadish, in other words, is the point that Braisa hadn't said the reason behind it. The Braisa just said the fact. Rava is saying the reason behind it, that Hashem had Rachmanos on him and helped him to recover faster. But in other words, we don't say that the original evaluation was wrong, and therefore we can't patter the mazik and make him have to pay more. And we can't patter the mazik and make him get back some of the money that he gave. We're not going to say that. We say the amount that based and evaluated that he has to pay for Ripui and for Sheves, that still stays as is. Okay. Getting back to the Mishnah had said, Rokak vihigia boyaroik. Other examples the Mishnah had described of boshes is where one person spits on another and the saliva actually landed on him. Vehevev chola, or if he took off the guy's talus off him and left him in the street in his underclothes. I'm skipping a line. So Amara Papa Loishonu Ella Boy. So that would only apply when we say that if he spit on him, then he's chayev for boshes, only if the saliva landed on the person himself, on his skin. Avo be big do loy, but if it landed on his clothing, then no, then we would not say he's chayev for boshes. So the Gemara says, why? Benehevi ki biyish bedvarim. Why? It's no less on the face of it than humiliating him with words. If the guy were to go and say words and then humiliate the guy and call him names and whatever in public, the Gemara is assuming, wouldn't he be chayev for boshes? So all the more so if he spit at him, even though it didn't actually land on his clothes, even though it didn't land on his body. So the answer is no. Amid ma rav mishmed rav Yosef ba'oven zloisay meres. Actually, no. We can learn from the fact what Rav Papa is saying zloisay meres bishay bedvarim potemiklum. As a matter of fact, no. If a person humiliates somebody else verbally, then he is in fact potter from paying for the nezek because the potter from paying for the boshes. That is because the concept of boshes applies only when he's doing a maaser, not when he's just doing something verbally. Then in fact he would in fact be potter. Now there are details within that. First of all, of course, he's chayav b'din shemayim, and there's no question he has to ask the other guy mechila, but an actual payment of boshes there wouldn't necessarily have to be when it was just a verbal thing. But also, there's a difference in that regard, who it was that he embarrassed verbally. Because if it's a Talmud Chacham, then you have other dinim. Then you have, first of all, already the Gaonim say, they bring from Rav Shura Gaon that a person insults somebody else in a way that humiliates him in public. Then we're going to put the one who did that in, we're going to put that, the one who did that in Cherem, if necessary, in order to make him pay something as appropriate for his covered. They bring the Rosh brings from Rav Shura going to that effect, and also there is the point that there's of course the point b'chlau speaking lashon hara and embarrassing another yid. We know that, but on top of that, also if the one that he insulted was a Talmud Chacham, then you have other dinim as well. Then he has to pay. The Rambam brings in these halachas, he does have to then pay boshes, even though it was only verbally. And the Rambam goes on to mention the amount of money. It's a certain amount of gold, a litra of gold, The Rambam has the expression like this: a person who embarrasses a Talmud Chacham, who humiliates him, even with words, they penalize him. They make him pay 35 gold dinar, which is nine slaughter. He goes and calculates how much that is. We have a Kabbalah, the Biadenu, we have a received tradition in Halacha that even though on the face of it this is a knas and we don't do knasas outside Eretz Yisrael, this one we do whether in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz La'aretz. And the Rambam goes on to describe that such things used to happen in Spain when I lived there. And there would be Talmud Chachamim who would be moichel on that and say, you don't have to pay me, and it's right and proper that a Talmud Chacham should do that. But nevertheless, the Beis Din would tell the Mazik, you are actually chayev to pay that amount so that he should realize so he shouldn't do that again. And then, so you have that din. So even though we're saying over here that a person is mevayesh as chaver b'dvarim, potter, it turns out he's not completely potter. There are things that Beis Din can do to make him, to put consequences on him, so he shouldn't do that, so he shouldn't do that anymore. With that said, though, that Amla does bring in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays we don't really have Talmud Chachamim of that caliber that we should collect that litra of gold for that. Nevertheless, Beis Din should get involved and do something about it as long as we can be sure that it's not the Talmud Chacham didn't start the argument. So to a certain extent, it'll depend on the discretion of the dayan. But nevertheless, we're saying over here there's no official payment for boshes in a case like that where it was only verbal. So the same thing, there's no official payment for boshes where he spit on him and the saliva landed on his clothing rather than on his body. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, kol lafi kvodeh v'cholah, we said that it all depends on his kavod. So we said we had the various amounts that it mentioned in the Mishnah, a sela for hatekeya b'chaveroi, whatever, we had different amounts all the way up to 400 zuz for some of these things that we talked about, like spitting at him or taking off his talus or whatever. So then the Mishnah had said, after it listed these amounts, it said, Hakol lafi kvoda, everything is according to his kavod. And then Rabbi Akiva had said that we look at them as though they're bnei chodin shiyodim and chseim, as though they're a rich person who would become poor. So, Iboilahu, Tanakama lakula karma or lachumra karma. When the Tanakama says, Hakol lafi kvoda, is he coming to be makel on the mazik or to be machmir? Lakula karma, does he mean lakula? That I'm giving you amounts. I'm telling you a seller for this kind of thing, 100 seller for that kind of thing, 200 for that, or zuz rather, a seller, which is 4 zuz for this kind of thing, 100 zuz for that kind of thing, 200, 400 for that kind of thing, etc. But the Tanakhama would be saying that's all for a regular person, but for a poor person, it would be less. So is that what the Tanakhama means? When it's a poor person, you don't give him as much for any of these types of things that it mentioned in the Mishnah. Maybe on the contrary, the Mishnah means the Tanakama means lachumra. Maybe it means when you have a rich person, then you have to give him even more. So basically the question is, are these amounts in the Mishnah, are they the ceiling or are they the floor? Are they the maximum amount that a person, is the Tanakama saying you're never going to be paying, for example, for Atakeya Lachaveroi, according to the Tanakama, you're never going to be paying more than a seller, according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, and we talked yesterday, the Halacha is like him, then you'd never pay more than a mona, which is 100 zuz, 25 seller. So if the person is a regular person, or even if he's the richest and most important person, that would be the maximum you'd pay. And then if he's a poor person, then Beis Din would scale it down. Is that what the Tanakama means? Or does he mean the other way around? The amounts in the Mishnah are the minimal amounts. He's tekei lachaveroi of the simplest person. He's paying a money, according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili. And then if the person that he did that to was more rich or influential or important or whatever, then you would pay more. So which is it? Toshma. So let's prove. Mitka Amar Rabbi Akiva, Afilu Anim Shem Yisrael, Royin Oysan Kila and Bnei Chorin Shiyodim Nechsehen. We said that Rabbi Akiva had said in the Mishnah that even the poorest yid, you consider them in terms of paying for their boshes and other things as though they, for their boshes primarily, as though they were rich people, as though they were rich, important people who lost their wealth. and they still have their dignity from before, because after all, Sha'afim b'nei Avram, Sha'ahim b'nei Avram Yitzchak v'Yaakov, because after all Jews are the children of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. So that means, in other words, that Rabbi Akiva is being the one who's machmir. He's saying, you mazik are going to have to pay, even though the person was poor, you're still going to have to pay as though the person was rich. Shmamina Tanakama Lakula Karma. So it comes out that the Tanakama is saying Lakula. We see, in other words, it actually points out in the continuation of the Mishnah, when you have that story of the guy who uncovered the woman's head and Rabbi Akiva told him 400 zuz, and then he played his whole trick to get her into a situation where she would uncover her head herself. So if the Tanakama meant that 400 is the minimum, and for a rich person, then you're paying even more. So then in that case of this Parah Rosh Ha'isha, she was a poor woman. Rabbi Akiva should have required him to pay even more. If the Tanakama meant for a poor person, you pay 400 for that. For a rich person, let's say you pay 500 or 600. Well, if Rabbi Akiva is saying you consider everybody as though they were formerly rich and still have their dignity, then in that story, Rabbi Akiva should be requiring the guy to pay 500 or 600 or whatever it is. Zuz. The fact that Rabbi Akiva says 400 in that story, shows Shramina Tanakama, Lakula Karma, that shows that the Tanakama meant Lakula. The Tanakama meant the maximum you ever pay is 400. Now, if the Tanakama had been the Dayan in that case where the guy uncovered the woman's head, he would have said, look, this woman is poor. Therefore, you, the Mavayish, are not required to pay the full 400. We're going to scale it down. You're going to have to pay 100 or 200 or whatever it is. Instead, comes Rabbi Akiva and says that no, even though she's poor, she's still Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, so therefore pay the full 400. But we see that Tanakama is saying it's never more than 400. Shemamina, good, that proves it. Okay. Now, the next part of the Mishnah had said, so there was that case of a man who uncovered a woman's head in the street, and Rabbi Akiva told him he has to pay 400 zuz. So now the Mishnah had continued with the story, and it said the guy said, Rebbe, give me a certain amount of time to come up with the money. The question is, does Beis Din in fact give extra time for such a kind of thing? Rav Chanina had said, you don't give time when it comes to chabalos. You have to pay. As soon as Beis Din gives the verdict, you have to take out the money and pay. So in that case, then when the guy says Rebbe ten lizman, why doesn't Rabbi Akiva tell him, no, you better have the cash now, and if not, then we're going to make you right now go sell something of yours or whatever to raise it. And the answer is, that would be when he caused the other guy to actually lose money. So for example, the ripui, right now, doctors have to be paid. Shevis, right now, he's out of work and is not making money. So those kinds of things, or for that matter, not with chabolas, other kinds of nizikin, when a person damages property or items belonging to somebody else, then Beis Din is not going to give him extra time to pay. They're going to tell him, look, you caused the hezek, you better be prepared to pay right away. In fact, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, Rav Akiva Eger, Yuri Nashas, refers to a Tosfos earlier in the Masechta. Now, you do have, obviously, for example, if we're talking about that we need Edim to come, then obviously we have to wait for them. But let's say, for example, you might have a case, for example, that Reuven and Shimon are coming to Beis Din. Reuven says, Shimon, you injured me or you damaged property of mine. You need to pay up. Shimon says, yeah, but on the other hand, Reuven, you owe me money for something else, and I'm going to bring Edim for that. So Tosfos says over there, no, Reuven is going to be entitled to collect for the Chavola right away. As far as Shimon, that he has a counterclaim against Reuven, fine, we tell Shimon, when you bring your Edim, then we'll go and deal with that. Anyway, the point is, when there's a loss of money involved, the Gemara is saying that's when we say, Ein noistin zman l'chavolis. But Avla Boshes, the Lechasrim Amoina, but when it comes to Boshes, there's no actual loss of money. This woman didn't lose any money by having her hair uncovered in the street. It was just an embarrassment and a loss of dignity. So that you have been, and we do give the person a reasonable amount of time to come up with the money. So the Mishnah described what the guy did. He waited and then until she's standing by the entrance of her chotzer, and then he broke a jug of oil, and she was taking the oil and putting it on her head, etc. So he has Adam watching what's going on, and then he comes to Rabbi Akiva and says, "Look, if she herself is uncovering her own head and she doesn't care about that, why should I have to pay 400 zuz for having done the same thing to her?" And Rabbi Akiva tells him, "Doesn't matter." Rabbi Akiva says, "Listen, the same way as a person is not allowed to injure himself, but nevertheless, if he does, he's potter from payment. Nevertheless, if another person injures him, he's chayev. The same way with you. She's not allowed to uncover her hair, but if she did, you can't be mechayev her payment for that. But nevertheless, that doesn't potter you from your payment." So the point is, Rabbi Akiva is telling the guy, in the course of what he's telling him, he's saying, you should know, a person is not allowed to injure themselves. Nevertheless, if a person did, he's potter from pain. So the Gemara says, "V'hatanya amulet Rabbi Akiva tzalalta b'mayim adudim v'haleisa cheres b'yoncha." What about, though, we learn in a braisa that Rabbi Akiva says it to him differently. He gives him a mashal. It looks like you dived into deep waters and all you brought up was a shard of earthenware. Like you put in a lot of effort into this, but nevertheless, what you came out with isn't worth anything. After all, Adam Rashoy L'chabal Ba'atzmai, a person is allowed to cause himself an injury. So you have a contradiction. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is saying that a person is not allowed to injure himself, and in the Braisa, Rabbi Akiva is saying he can. Amar Rava, like Kasha kan b'chabola kan b'boshes. There's no contradiction. One is talking about chabola, an actual injury. The other one is talking about boshes. So a person is taka, not allowed to injure his own body. But on the other hand, he is allowed to cause himself embarrassment. So Gemara says, what do you mean? B'homas nisin b'boshes hu. What do you mean? The Mishnah is talking about boshes. V'katoni ha'choyva ba'atzmei af b'she'en rashoi potter. And yet the Mishnah had used the expression that if a person is choyvo, if a person causes himself a damage, even though he's not allowed to, potter. Then he's potter. So in the context of the Mishnah, it seems Rabbi Akiva is telling him a person is not allowed to cause himself boshes. So what does that do with Rava's distinction? Hachi kamalei. No, we have to understand in the Mishnah where Rabbi Akiva is saying like this. Loi mi boya boshes. Needless to say, when it comes to boshes, the adam rashoi levayishes matzvah. To begin with, a person is allowed to cause himself boshes. So therefore, if he does that, then the fact that he himself can do that doesn't mean, therefore, that if other people do that, they become potter. El afilu chavola. Even when it comes to an actual injury, the ein adam rashoi lachavol lachvol baatzvah. A person is not allowed to injure himself. Nevertheless, achirim shechavol by chayavin. Nevertheless. If somebody else injures him, they're going to be chayev. So that's what he says, when he says, he doesn't mean a person is not allowed to cause himself boshes. He means a person can cause himself boshes. So there's no question that if somebody else causes him boshes, he's chayev. But when chavola, you would say an injury, you would say, look, he himself is not even allowed to do that. And he's potter. Why shouldn't we say that I'm not allowed to do that? I'm potter. And Rabbi Akiva tells him it doesn't work that way. And Tosfos points out when we talk about again that afpichen and ashori, that a person injures himself even though he's not allowed to potter. What do we mean by potter exactly? Obviously, there's no chi of moment because he can't very well pay himself. And when if it means potter from Malkus, actually maybe he should be chayev. Tosfos doesn't say he should be chayev from Malkus for injuring himself. The Tiferes Yisrael booms up that point. But Tosfos says, after all, the Mishnah had also mentioned chopping down trees where a person is chayev Malkus for that because you have an issue of loy sashchus, of bal tashchus. Tosfos says that what we mean is, in other words, even though there might be Malkus, still you have the concept appointed a mayor, at least loiko mashalim. You can have a person get to Malkus and he has to pay money. So you'd have, in other words, if a person cuts down his own tree, he might be chayev Malkus for cutting it down, but he's potter from any monetary payment because there's nobody to pay to. But if somebody else does that, he would be getting Malkus and paying. That's what we mean by chayev and potter, respectively. Okay. The Gemara asks, "V'ein adam rashoi l'chabel ba'atzmai." You're telling me a person is not allowed to injure himself? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, "Yochol nishba lahora ba'atzmai v'laheira yehei potter." You would think if a person makes a shvua to cause harm to himself, and he didn't end up doing it. You would think that he should be potter for breaking his shura. Nope. Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says lahora ulahetiv. The pasuk says to do bad or to do good, and that means maha tovah reshus. Just like doing good, we're talking about something optional. We're not talking about, in other words, that the person is. So the hatova means to be a reshus, meaning, in other words, that and the Rashi refers to a Gemara in Shavuos, which we'll learn next year or so, Be'ez Hashem, that talks about, in other words, that the hatova in the pasuk is not talking about, for example, the person does a shvua, the person makes a shvua to do a mitzvah, which is something that he's required to do. Rather, we're talking about a person does a shvua to do something of reshus. For example, I'm going to eat this food. So just like that's a reshus, af hara reshus, the same way the hara has to be something which is optional, where he could do that. So obviyat nishva lahara ba'atmai v'laheira. So therefore, that includes somebody who made a shvur that he's going to harm himself, and he doesn't, and therefore he's chayev a korban for breaking that shvur. So we see from that that it's a reshus. A person has the option of harming himself. So what are we saying that he's that ein reshoi? So Shmuel says, it doesn't mean, in other words, that he's saying that he's making a shvua that he's going to harm himself, he's going to break his own arm, or he's going to whatever. He means that he makes a shvua that he's going to fast. But we're talking about, what he says, I will sit and I will fast. So now, if he makes a neder, if he makes a shvua that he's going to fast on a certain day, and he doesn't, then he's over on his shvua and he's chai for a korban. So the Gemara says, now the Braisa is talking about that you have a person can make a shvua lahora ilahetiv for himself, and it can also be lahora ilahetiv for somebody else. So in other words, you can have a person can make a shvua lahetiv for myself, I will eat this food, or lahora, we're saying now, would mean I will fast. So what does that mean then? We're saying the parallel thing would be with somebody else. Lahetiv would be fine. I'm going to give this other person this food. What would lahora be? I'm going to force the other person to fast. How do you force somebody else to fast? And the answer is, hey, yeah, demachse. So in other words, if we're talking about, for example, an actual injury, then you can say, I'm making a shvua that I will hit myself until I bleed. And then you could say, I'm making a shvua that I'm going to hit somebody else until he bleeds. But if you're going to say shvua lahora, if you're going to say, and if we're saying, and if the Braisa is saying that kind of thing is reshus, then it would mean a person is allowed to do such a thing to himself. And now he's not allowed to do it to somebody else, but either way, it's considered a shvua. But if you're telling me the whole shvua lahora, as Shmuel is saying, is only that he's saying, I'm going to fast, how do you have the parallel by somebody else? Can he force somebody else to fast? And the answer is, ain't the mahadik lahuba indirona. Sure, he locks them up in a room without food, and therefore they fast because they have no food. Okay, so fine, but the Gemara says, Bahatanya, but we learn in another braisa. The braisa continues, what is an example of doing bad for somebody else, where the Torah is saying that if a person makes a shvua to do that, and then what is haruas achedim? What is the definition of where a person makes it a shvua to do something bad to somebody else? Would be, for example, he says, "Ake ploini v'eftzas moichai." I'm going to hit ploini and I'm going to break his head. So that's an actual chabala. So we're saying, though, that if a person makes a shvua to do that to somebody else, it's not necessarily considered a valid shvua because he's not allowed to do that. But the implication of the braisa seems to be that if he makes a shvua that he's going to do that to himself, then it's considered a valid shvua. He's not going to end up doing it, but then he's going to end up being chayav a korban for violating the shvua. So we see that a person is allowed to do that because that's considered dvar harishus. And then if he doesn't do that, then he's chayav a shvua. Then he's chayav a korban. So that would mean that he is allowed to injure himself. Ella, the Gemara says, you're right. Tanoi. Actually, it's a machloek. It's tanoi. There's machloek. It's tanoi about that. So therefore, when we have the two different reports of what Rabbi Akiva said to this guy in the story, in the Mishnah, then you have those reflect the two different opinions, whether a person is or isn't allowed to injure himself. So, So in other words, so Tosfa says, so we're not using the answers that we said before about a difference between Chavola and Boshas or anything like that. Even within Chavola itself, you have a different Tanoim who disagree what Rabbi Akiva holds. Okay, so the Gemara says, Man Tana de Shamet Le de Omer Einon Mashoi L'Chavol Ba'atzmai. Well, which Tana do we actually find who says that a person is not allowed to injure himself? Where do we find, you're saying we have two brises, and one of them says that you're allowed to, and the other one says you're not allowed to. So who is the Tana who would say, where do we find an explicit Tana who actually says that you would be allowed to? Elema, or who says that you're not allowed to? Elema hai Tana hu. Are you going to say it's the Tana of the following brisa? The Tanya, the achas dimcham l'nafshesechem edrash. The pasuk says in Parashas Noach, Hashem says to Noach and to his children, however, your blood for your own lives, I will look after, I will demand punishment for. And Rabbi Loza Omer, miyad nafshesechem edrash as dimchem. Rabbi Loza says it means that Hashem will demand punishment from the person himself for his own edrash as dimchem. I will require punishment for spilling your own blood. So the question is, v'domach tola shiny. Maybe it's different with killing. Maybe, you know, the pasuk is saying, if a person commits suicide, then Hashem is saying, I'm going to punish him for that. But not necessarily. Are we talking about injuring? So no. Ela hai tanu. Rather, it's the tana of the following brisa. The tanya, mekarin alam mes. We rip our clothes when a mess passes away. It's not considered darche ha'emodi. It's not considered one of the goyish superstitious practices to do that. So, meaning, in other words, obviously there's no chidush in that part itself. Obviously, it's not just you're allowed to. You have to kriya ala mes. So the Torah Chaim says, in other words, you when you do kriya, don't do it in the way of darche ha'emodi, where they do it an excessive amount. Just do a normal kriya. And the Braisa continues, Omer Rabbi Lazar, Shamaiti, Shamakarei al mes yosemidai. I have heard from my Rabbeim that if a person rips too much for a mess, so he does like the Amodium, Loike, then he's going to be getting Malchus de Rabbanon, Mishum Baltashkes, because he was over on the Isser of Baltashkes. Tosfos has a slightly different gear, so over Mishum Baltashkes. So not necessarily that he's getting Malchus, although Beistin could do whatever they feel is necessary. But Minatora, the Rambam explains that the Minatora, a person is chayiv for Baltashkes only for trees, because that's the context in which the Torah tells it. The whole concept of Baltashkes applying to other things applies only midrabanan. Therefore, there'd only be Makas Maudus. And the point is, Tosfos says, obviously, when we know if a person is ripping clothes, he's over on Baltashkes. The point is that you're not allowed to do it even with Sodach. Even, for example, in this case, and in the case of our Mishnah, for example, the woman was uncovering her head with Sodach. She wanted to keep the oil from going to waste. Nevertheless, you're not supposed to do that. So and similarly, when it comes to ripping clothing, that a person is ripping his clothing, you have times when you're allowed to and you're supposed to, for example, for a mess, but outside of that, it would be baltashkes. Anyway, v'chol shekin gufen. So if Rabbi Lazar is saying a person is over on baltashkes even for ripping his clothes, wouldn't it be all the more so if he rips or injures his body? So there would be the Tana who says that a person is not allowed to injure himself. So the Gemara says, why? On the contrary, v'dum of godim shiny, maybe clothes is different. After all, it's a loss that's not going to recover. The clothes are not going to heal themselves. A body will. First of all, we have the example that Rabbi Yochanan would call his clothes the ones that honor me. So therefore, on the contrary, maybe he has to be more careful about his clothes than his guf. There's an explanation that he meant particularly as Shabbos clothes, but whatever. The point is, we see that the clothes give cover to the body, so in a way, they're more important. So that's first of all. You have a beruchnius as well. You know, you have the neshama itself, and then you have the levushim of the neshama, which are machshava, dibur, and maisa. And in some ways, those are more important because that's how the neshama expresses itself. Anyway. So Frakeut, you could say that. And also, here's another example. V'Rav Chista, ki have a maski b'ni hizmi behege, where Rav Chista would be walking between thorns and thistles, madli lahulamane, he would lift up the hems of his garment, even though it means that his legs are going to get scratched. Omar, because he would say, Zem ala rucha, v'zeinem ala rucha, the body will heal. Scratches on the body will heal. Rips in the clothing will not. We find a similar thing in Masechta Tainis. It tells about a grandson of Choni Amagel over there. whose name I can't remember just now, but anyway, the Gemara tells a whole story. The Gemara tells a whole story with him that he was a tzaddik, that the Chum had come to him to daven for rain when there was a drought, and then they saw him doing a lot of unusual things, which they afterwards asked him about. One of them was that when he's walking through the fields over there, through the thorns and the thistles, he's lifting up his garments. He's lifting up his garments, and he makes the same point: Zem ala arucha v'zeinim ala arucha. The body will heal, the clothes will not. So sort of Chista would do the same kind of thing. The point being, in other words, so Adrabba, you could say, just because Rabbi Lazar is saying that a person is over on an Easter when if he rips his clothes, maybe precisely because the clothes won't regenerate, how do you prove from that, a Kavah Chomer, that a person can't injure his body where his body will recover? So you still don't have yet a Tana who says that you can't injure yourself. Ela hai Tana. Rather, we can say it the following Tana, the Tanya, Omer Rabbi Lazar HaKapa Beribi, Rabbi Lazar HaKapa Beribi says, Beribi means not that he's the son of Rebbe, it means he's the greatest Tamad Chacham of his times. Ma Tamad Loim B'Chipur Olam HaShachot Alam Nafesh. What does it mean when the Pasuk says that by a Nazir, that the Kohen brings the Korban for him and brings a Kapara because he sinned on a soul. Now, in context, the pasuk is talking about a nazir who became tamei, and now he has to restart his nazirus. So they bring a korban for him. But nevertheless, why we call him a nazir? That he was chota al nefesh. V'chi be'ez a nefesh chota. What chota zeh? What nefesh was he chota in? If you're going to say he was a nazir tamei, then fine. He was chota because he was careless and became tamei. But still, on the face of it, one explanation, the Shittim Kobetzis brings an explanation, fine, but he's obviously going to be careful in the future not to make it happen again. He doesn't want to start his Nazirus yet again. So why does he need a kapara? And he's now bringing Karbonis for it. Why are we B'chalal saying that he needs a kapara for it, as though like he did something wrong and he's going to do it again and again if he's not careful? But also the point is that Tosfos discusses over here that there is also the point what Rabbi Lazar HaKapa was saying does apply to a certain extent to a Nazir Tohar as well, even though he's not having to restart in the Zidrus, he never became Tomei. So what is the Chot Alam Nafesh? El Shetzir Atzmi Min Hayayin. It's because he deprived himself of wine. So because of that, it's considered that Chot Alam Nafesh. So Abba Chilkiya, by the way, that was the name of the grandson of Choni Amagel. Anyway, so Ella should see you after Munayan. So Rabbi Lazar HaKapa says you can make a kavachomer. Madoch the nazir who only deprived himself of wine is called a choite. How much more so a person who deprives himself of other kinds of things, for example, fasting without a good reason, is called a choite. So we see that Rabbi Lazar HaKapa holds that a person is not allowed to injure himself or do anything to harm himself, for example, fasting unnecessarily. So he would be the Tana who holds that. So when we said before, that would be according to that Tana. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion. Rav Moshe, for example, has various shuvas on the subject. For example, is a person allowed to undergo plastic surgery? That's a chabola ba'atzma. It's causing himself an injury. On the other hand, maybe it has a positive purpose. And so he talks about, for example, you can have, let's say, where a person has some kind of thing where they have some kind of disfigurement, whether because they were born that way, whether because of a previous accident or whatever, where now the plastic surgery is being done to get them to look normal and be able to function in society again, then that's a legitimate thing. That's not lachbo ba'atzma. But for example, a person is just getting plastic surgery in order to look more, in order to look better or whatever, where there's no actual issue, then that might taka be a problem of lachlo batzmi. So the Gemara says, so the Mishnah had continued, hakotzit nitiyosa b'chola. We had a case where a person chops down the midr. Rabbi Akiva had given another example. If I chop down my own tree, then I'm potter. But if I chop down somebody else's tree, then I'm chayev. The same way he's saying this woman uncovered her hair, she's potter, but nevertheless, you're still chayev to pay. So the Gemara brings in this connection. Tony Rabba Baba Chonaka made the Rab, Shuri Haragton, the Oitse Katatsta. Suppose that Reuven says to Shimon, you killed my shur, or you chopped down my trees. And Shimon answers back, Ata Amartu the Lahogo, Ata Amartu the Lakotatai, you told me to kill the animal, or you told me to chop down the tree. Potter. So then he's Potter from pain. Like Mar says, Amalei. So Rav says, Im came a shavkas chaya v'chot lebriyasa. Then you're not allowing anybody to live. Kol kamine, how can we believe him? Any person who says, you caused me a hezek, the other one's going to say, the other one is going to counterclaim you told me to. Omalei, so Rav Baba Chana says, Esmiye, should I delete this brisa from my collection of brises? Is it a wrong brisa that from now on I should not continue teaching?
What's about a bit of
who's saying about Shliach and Ranabeh? He's saying himself. A person is, I'm allowed to kill my own shur for whatever reason, so I'm also entitled to tell somebody else to do it. But the question was, though, how can we believe the second guy just because he says, you told me so? So Omalei Esmiye, so he says, should I delete this braisa? Should I not teach it anymore? Omalei Loi, so Rav tells him no. To Targum Masnisach b'shur ha'umid lahariga over ilan ha'umid l'tzitza. Rather, you should explain the next time you teach the braisa that you're talking about a shur that needs to be killed or a tree that needs to be chopped down. So now, for example, it's a dangerous shur that has previously, for example, Rashi says shur shahemis, it killed somebody. So even when we don't have Nisa spaced in anymore, nevertheless, the owner should be shtechting it. So now, if he says to Shimon, well, you did that, and Shimon says, yeah, but you told me to, and it was supposed to be killed anyway, then we can say that Shimon is potter. And the same thing with the tree. As far as Oymen Lekzisa, Rashi gives a couple of examples. One could be it's an Asherah tree, where you have a mitzvah to chop it down. Another one could be where it's leaning over to Shas Rabim, and it may fall and kill or hurt somebody. So the question is, well, then what's the argument that the guy is making in the first place? What do you mean, Shori Karagda? If the ox needed to be killed, what does he care whether he did it or whether Shimon did it? And the answer is, because the owner can say, I wanted to do the mitzvah myself, and you deprived me of the mitzvah. Detanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, when the pasuk is b'shofach b'chisa, the pasuk describes that a person shechts a wild animal or a bird, the pasuk says he spills the blood and he covers it, he does kisi adam. We learn from that, misha shofach yechase, the one who spilled the blood, the shechet, should be the one who does the kisi adam. Now, when we do kaparis, for example, we don't do that. The shechet allows us to do the kisi adam, so we get an extra mitzvah. But in principle, the one who did the shechita is the one who should do the kisi adam. It happened once that one person shechted and somebody else jumped in and did the kisi adam and deprived him of the mitzvah. Rabban Gamliel required the guy to pay him 10 gold coins for depriving him of the mitzvah. Primarily, actually, Tosfos refers to the Gemara, tells the story in Cholin, Perek Kisi Adam. The Gemara explains over there, actually, the 10 gold coins are actually the schar of the bracha, that he deprived him from making the bracha, Asher Kudushan Mitzvah Yitzvano, Al Kisi Adam Ba'ofer. And Tosfos says that actually that means the mitzvah and the bracha all count as one thing. So in other words, the 10 gold coins was meant to cover the fact that he deprived him of the bracha and the mitzvah that went in. Now, what? It's a lot of money, yeah. So now, Tosfos says, here, when we're talking about this shur, or this tree over here, there's no bracha, but nevertheless, there is a schar mitzvah, and therefore, now, the guy has a complaint. He's maybe not demanding the 10 zehuvim, because after all, there's no bracha involved, but nevertheless, he did deprive him of a mitzvah. Tosfos actually brings an interesting case. There was a guy who, one time, they wanted a certain person to lay in the turn of the Pashto, says the Baal Kodeh, and somebody else jumped in and did it instead. So now the question came to Rabbeinu Tam, what should he do? What does he have to pay him? So Rabbeinu Tam said, give him a chicken to shech. Then it wasn't for as a Baal Kodeh, it was an oila. A person was supposed to get an aliyah, and somebody else jumped in and got the aliyah instead. So Rabbeinu Tam tells him, give him a chicken to shech. That way, he'll be able to make the bracha up for the shchita and for the kisi adam. That's two brachas. That will make up for the two brachas that you deprived him of by the Torah. But then the Re disagreed with that and said, no, in that case, the Ram Gamliel should have said the same thing. That kisi adam, give him an opportunity to do a different mitzvah that he can make two brachas. Why is he making him pay asorah zehuvim? Then Tosfos continues that Rabbeinu Tam actually said, you know what? You had a chance to answer Amen. So therefore, you don't need to be paid back for the two brachas. And also, Bechlal, this whole thing that you don't judge this outside Eretz Yisrael anyway. Ram Gamliel was a Samuch, and he was in Eretz Yisrael. He could judge such cases outside Eretz Yisrael, not necessarily. So for all those reasons, when a person deprives somebody else of a bracha, not necessarily is there a payment involved. Anyway, here there's no bracha, so therefore, yeah. Okay. So the point being, in other words, that so that's the case when Reuven says, you killed my shur, and Shimon says, you told me to. The case is the shur needed to be killed anyway, and you deprived me of the mitzvah, but nevertheless, she can't make Shimon pay, because the fact is there was no actual nezek over here because the shur needed to be killed anyway. So we're saying, again, it could be, so Rashi gave the example, it was a shur that had killed a person, where even when there's no base in it, still we should be killing it if we can. Okay, let's see if we can get to the Mishnah. The Gemara continues, Omer Rav, Dikla the Ton Kaba also the Miktite, a palm tree, that let's talk about these dinim of cutting down trees, a palm tree that has on it at least a that bears at least a calf of dates, about 3 pounds. Also, the mikta say you're not allowed to chop down such a tree. So the Gemara says, "Maisvi, I have a contradiction. A brisa says, Kama yehe bezayis v'lo yikatzoi. How much does an olive tree have to be bearing that you shouldn't chop it down? Roiva, a quarter of a calf. So why by so what? So it seems that a quarter of a calf is enough to be important enough that you shouldn't chop down the tree." And the answer is Chinese zaysin, the hashivi. Olive trees are different. They're more important, whereas the olives are more expensive, whereas dates are cheap. So the Gemara. Yeah, you get oil out of them, and yeah. Amar Rab Chanina, and in fact, Rab Chanina points out, Lo shochiv shivchas bri, ela tekotztei nasa b'lei zimna. My son Shivchas passed away young, only because he chopped down a fig tree when he wasn't supposed to, when the fig tree was still bearing fruit. However, Ravina points out, if the wood of the tree is worth more than the fruit, mutter, then it is allowed to chop it down. That's not considered hashchasa, because after all, the wood is worth more. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi. We learn similarly in Braisa. Where do we know the whole concept of not chopping down trees in Baltashkis? The Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes, you're besieging a city, and you need wood for siege works and whatever. So the Pasuk says, don't chop down the fruit trees. But it continues, Rak Eitza Shateda, however, a tree that you know. And the Gemara interjects, Zet Ilan Meichel. So that means that you know that so we're referring to a tree that produces fruit, that produces edible fruit, and we're saying, Kilo Eitz Meichel Hu. The pasuk continues, that it's not a fruit tree, meaning Zet Ilan Srak. That refers to a non-fruit bearing tree. So you have to ask. So in other words, so the pasuk is mentioning both of them, and the pasuk is implying both of them and saying that you can chop them down when necessary. So the question is, well, if in the end we're including both kinds of trees, then why is the pasuk saying that it's not a fruit tree? Just say, if you know, if you need to chop it down, then you chop it down. The reason is, it comes to tell you, put the non-fruit-bearing tree ahead of the fruit-bearing one. If you have a choice of two trees to chop down because you need the wood, chop down the non-fruit-bearing one. Now you would think that applies even if the fruit tree, the wood of it, is worth more than the fruit. Therefore, the pasuk says rak is a miut, that there are cases where you can chop down fruit trees even lachatchila, where the wood is worth more. With that said, though, the poskim talk about this a lot and say it's actually not so simple. Besides the matter of Baltashkis, there is also something that it says in Sefer Chassidim that a person can be in danger from chopping down a fruit tree, and we just said that upon his son passed away as a result of it. So there is a tremendous amount of discussion among the poskim, Rishonim, and Achronim on this subject. Chavis Yoyer, for example, has a tshuva about it in a case where a tree was blocking a person's window. Is he allowed to chop it down? So the Chavis Yoyer says, in principle, maybe, but given these considerations, maybe what you would do better is just to chop off some branches from it rather than the tree as a whole. And similarly, there are various other Achronim that talk about things in this regard, that a person should be careful, even if it's not bearing fruit anymore, or very little, or even we're saying over here the wood is worth more, etc. Nevertheless, it's good to be careful and not chop it down to avoid chopping it down, even in cases where it might be necessary. So the Gemara gives some examples. Shmuel Aisilech Arise Tami. One time, Shmuel's Oris, his sharecropper, brought him some dates from one of his palm trees. Ochil, Shmuel ate the dates, Toim Bohu, time of the Chamra, and the dates tasted of wine. Omale Mai Hai, why do they taste of wine? Omale Bene Gufne Kaime, because these palm trees are growing between the grapevines. Now that's allowed. It's not a problem of Kalayim. Kalayim is only when you have grain or vegetables growing among grapevines. Trees, you're allowed. But Shmuel realizes makashi b'chamra kula hai. So you're telling me that so obviously if the dates taste of wine, that means they're taking out so much nourishment from the soil that it's affecting the grapevines, that the energy from the soil, that the nutrients and whatever that should go into the grapevines instead of going into the dates. They're taking from the grapevines themselves. Lamacha, I see the mekorayu. Tomorrow I want you to bring me mekorayu. So Rashi says two explanations. Mekorayu can mean mako shalahan, meaning the entire tree. I want you to chop down the tree and bring it. Or Rashi says the mekorayu can mean from their kur. The kur is the heart of palm, which you can eat. You know, you can buy hearts of palm in the store. When you take out the heart of the palm, that the palm tree dies. So therefore, he's telling him, bring me the cur tomorrow and we'll eat it. And in that way, the palm tree will die, or at least weaken. And that way it won't be taking so much nourishment from the grapevines anymore. So we see there is an example where you can do that to a tree. And another example, Rav Chista Chaza Toli Bei Gufni. Rav Chista also one time noticed that there are palm trees among his grapevines. He tells his oris also uproot. Toli actually means little palm trees, so like they're not fully grown yet. But anyway, he tells him uproot them because gufni koni dikli dikli le koni gufni. You see that grapevines are more important. We can take the value of the wine that we produce from the grapes that grow over here, and we could use that to buy even other land where we could grow more grapevines or whatever. But the other way around, because palm trees and their fruit are cheap, they're very plentiful in Bavel, and therefore they were very cheap. You wouldn't be able to buy land for grapevines with those, and therefore, in other words, in short, the grapevines are worth a lot more than the palm trees, and therefore we can uproot the palm trees to make way for grapevines that we can plant there instead, where then we'll get a better yield out of this piece of land. So we see that these are examples where it's legitimate to chop down or to remove a tree. But again, you know, as I said, the post of Achronim talk about various details about it, about how careful we should be in that, even in places where technically we would be allowed to. There's an example in Igros Kodesh as well. Somebody asked the Rebbe about that, and the Rebbe said basically don't get involved because of all those considerations. So when a person has a tree that's causing trouble or whatever, then you ask the Rav what to do in the individual situation. If you replant it someplace else, then fine, that's all the good, but not always are you able to do that. So there are different considerations involved, yeah. Okay.